We are reading from James chapter 5. And yeah, the main idea we're going to be looking at today is patience in suffering. Yeah, so I'll start off with a little introduction here. I've always been the younger brother for my whole life. You know, my older brother, he was always stronger, always faster and bigger. He could always take me down when we were wrestling and everything. And yeah, it was fun for a little bit, but you know, after a while, I would get frustrated. I'm like, why can't I get him? Why can't I win? You know, and I was just jealous of him. And he would always push my buttons, as the older brothers do. He knew exactly what to do to make me angry. And yeah, sometimes, or all the time, I just wouldn't like it. But as the younger brother, I wasn't always the innocent one here. You see, I knew he may know what to do to make me angry, but I know exactly what I need to do to get him in trouble, which is equally as powerful, I would say. So every time we're wrestling or whatnot, and I would get too upset, all I have to do is just yell, "Stop, stop, Dawson, stop." And my mom would have enough, and she would go and punish him. And it was too easy. It was honestly too easy. It was too easy. And now, my mom actually told me about this. There were some times where I would just go up into my room, I'm by myself, and I would just start yelling, "Stop, stop," for no reason, just hoping maybe I can get him in trouble. You know, I'm just, I'm playing with my dump trucks or whatever, and I'm just, you know, doing my own thing. You know, "Stop, Dawson, stop!" And then my mom would sometimes, she would go and just get him in trouble just from hearing me yelling. And this did work until the one time I was doing it and she was getting very upset. You know, she's hearing me screaming and she's like, "Wow, he's really not stopping this time." And so she runs up there, probably grabs a wooden spoon, you know, about to give him the whooping that his grandkids are going to feel, until she opens the door and sees me by myself just yelling away for no reason at all. And yeah, that ended with probably my great-grandkids are going to feel that one. So yeah, didn't end well. But he would get in trouble sometimes for something he didn't do. It was unjust suffering that he experienced, because I would get full of myself and I was jealous of him and I wanted to bring him below me so that I could feel a little bit better about myself. And so it's kind of a pretty silly example, but it's similar to what James 5 is saying, that the righteous will experience unjust suffering from the rich and the wealthy. And so, yeah, we're just gonna jump in here. And yeah, I just wanted to start by looking at the few verses before the text that Maddie read. So this was found in James 5, verses 1 to 6. And so this is talking about, it's a little different, but it's very related. So it's talking about the rich people, and they're going to experience a lot of misery and suffering. And so the rich are, they're just becoming attached to their belongings, you know, they're becoming self-indulgent, and they're pursuing self-pleasure rather than looking to the Lord. And they often disregard the potential future consequences. And so because of this, because of their suffering, and because they're not turning to the Lord, they'll condemn and they murder the righteous, as it says in James. So I'm going to read a little passage here. This is from Luke 18 to 25. And this is talking about the rich young ruler. So it said, this is from the ESV here. "And the ruler asked him, 'Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?' And Jesus said to him, 'Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. And you know the commandments: do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness, honor your father and mother.' And he said, 'All these I have kept from my youth.' And when Jesus heard this, he said to him, 'One thing you still lack. Sell all that you have and distribute to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me.' But when he heard these things, he became very sad, for he was extremely rich. And Jesus, seeing that he had become sad, said, 'How difficult it is for those who have wealth to enter the kingdom of God. For it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for the rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven.'" And so, yeah, we can see a clear example of how the rich people, although they have so much here on earth, they have nothing when it comes to faith, and they have nothing in heaven. And so, yeah, we'll break this down into 3 points here. So be patient until the coming of the Lord. Do not grumble against one another, and do not swear by heaven or by earth. So yeah, the first one we'll look at is being patient until the coming of the Lord. So yeah, at the beginning of verse 7, it says, be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. And so, yeah, we'll notice one of the key words there is, at the beginning he says, therefore, be patient. And it's important because this is tying the first few verses that I talked about before into these, into the, you know, chapter 7, or sorry, verse 7 to 12. Therefore, be patient. As it said, the rich will condemn and murder the righteous people unjustly. Yeah, and it sounds pretty harsh, but it shows, like James provides a way of rescue and a way of help, and it's just to be patient. As Christians, we shouldn't give up when we're suffering or when we don't see any changes in our lives, but trust that the Lord is working in our lives, even in small ways when we cannot see it. So at the end of verse 7b, it says, see how the farmer waits for the precious fruits of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains. Like, a farmer has to be very patient when he's farming, and it takes a lot of work. If his crop doesn't yield fruit right away, he does not give up but works hard, and he continues caring for the crops until he sees results. It takes hard work, but hard work will yield results. The farmer has to water the crops, remove the weeds, and make sure the seeds are in a good, healthy environment that they can grow. In the same way, us as Christians, we have to practice patience when we encounter difficult times in our lives. If we're feeling troubled or suffering and we pray to God and ask for help, but we don't notice anything changing, we can't just give up, right? We can't just give up. We have to remain patient and endure even when it's difficult. Trusting in God's plan. Yeah, it can be very, very hard to do this. You know, God works in very mysterious ways, in ways that we can't even fathom. But trusting that He is the only one in control, it's hard and it takes a long time. But the best thing we can do is just surrender to God's control. And just as the crop is slowly growing and changing, even when we cannot see it, so is the Lord working in our lives and when we don't even notice it. Think of the story we all know about Joseph and the rainbow coat in Genesis. You know, his brothers were jealous of him because he was dad's favorite, you know. And so they sold him away to slavery, and Joseph suffered tremendously for years, all unjustly. His brothers sold him away after he did nothing wrong. Then he was framed and falsely accused by Potiphar's wife, and he was also forgotten about in prison by the chief cupbearer for 2 years. But through all this, we can see God is clearly working in his life every step of the way, and he is with him. And just as Joseph says in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. This is Joseph talking to his older brothers, because they sent him away trying to do evil things to him. And when Joseph did not deserve it at all, but God turned it around, and he made it for good. And so at the end of verse 7 in James, it says, until the coming of the Lord. This part of the verse is acting like a warning in a way. The coming of the Lord is referring to the day when Jesus returns once and for all. He will return for judgment day and judge all the righteous and the unrighteous. In the previous text, James chapter 5, verse 1-6, he's talking about how the rich and wealthy on earth have oppressed and mistreated the Christians. And then it says in verse 6, yeah, the same thing. You've condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you. Christians have suffered unfairly by people of the world and sometimes can question to God why this happens, why we have to suffer for doing good things. But James reminds us to be patient and wait with steadfastness for the coming of the Lord, because God will deal with them justly. It's not our job to be the judges. James covers this again in chapter 4, verse 12, by saying, there's only one lawgiver and one judge, he who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? We have no place to be judging others, as we ourselves will be judged the same by God. Even though some people we could think might display their sins more clearly on the outside, we still all fall short of God's glory at the end of the day, and we're all sinful. There's the story in John chapter 8 that clearly explains this, and it's about the woman caught in adultery, if you've read this. This is in John chapter 8, verse 1 to 11. They went each to his own house, but Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Early in the morning, he came again to the temple. All the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery, and placing her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. So what do you say?" This they said to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. And as they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." And once more he bent down and wrote on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the older ones. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus stood up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, sin no more." Once again, this just proves how none of us are righteous and have no place to be judging others who we think are more sinful than ourselves. Like all the Pharisees who were the most holy, the most righteous people, they themselves sin just as much as the woman. And so at the end of James 5, verse 6, it says, "You have condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you." He says the righteous should not retaliate at these actions that the unbelievers do to us, because it's not loving and honoring to God. Just as Jesus mentions in his Sermon on the Mount with the Beatitudes, "Do not resist the one who is evil, but if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also." This again reflects the love of Christ, as he even shows such love to the evil and the condemners of the world. And he gives us such a solid example to live by. And similar to this, James repeats himself in verse 8 by saying, "You also, be patient, establish your hearts for the coming of the Lord." James says, as we wait, we should have established hearts, meaning that we have hearts that are rooted in Jesus and his eternal resolution of all things. He basically says to live like Jesus did in this passage. Live with kind and sincere hearts, and be gracious to the evil ones, as they do not know the Lord. Yeah, it's so easy to want to lash back at them with anger, but we just have to remember that they don't know any better because they're not living like the Lord does, or like the Lord has taught us to live. And so, yeah, a few years ago, I was riding my bike, and I went off a big jump. I tried to do a cool trick, and I ended up crashing, and I sprained my ankle very bad. You know, I could barely walk. It swelled up to the size of an elephant's leg. And, you know, this was unfortunate because right as I was about to go into summertime, this happened, and so I had to sit out on all my favorite activities to do. So, you know, me and my family went up to the cabin, and we always do a lot of wakeboarding, me and my brother and my friends. But I got the privilege of sitting in the boat the whole time and watching my friends go and have all the fun while I was just sulking. You know, I was frustrated. I'm like, I want to be doing that. But, yeah, and another reason why this was hard was because I couldn't play the drums properly, you know, because I had hurt my right leg, which is my dominant foot, and I wasn't able to do that. And, yeah, that was pretty unfortunate because that's one of my favorite things to do. And so what I had to do was I had to figure out a way that I could use my left foot, which was super awkward, and it was just terrible. I hated it. But I had to do this for a few months because it took a long time to heal, long time. And so I was just frustrated this whole time, but I just had to go through. And by the end of it, I was pretty sick of it. And so a few months went by, finally, and the swelling was going down, the pain was going down, and it finally healed. And I was very thankful that that was over, and it felt like it took forever. And I was just wondering why I had to go through that. And so looking back, I had realized that I really had strengthened my other foot while playing. You know, I could incorporate that into, every time I'm drumming, I got to do that. And so I never would have gone through the horrible process of strengthening my other foot if I hadn't had injured this leg. And so I was actually pretty happy that this happened, because it helped me progress quite a bit in my skill. And so through this, even though it seems like such a small thing, God knew exactly what I needed and what was good for me. And by the end of it, it grew me closer to God through that, because I was able to see him working even in such small ways like that. So that was a cool experience that I had to be patient while I had this injury. And even when I felt, I don't deserve to have this injury, but I haven't done anything right that I should deserve anything. So that was a cool experience. And so, by looking back at difficult times in our lives, it's good to remember and try and think of how God could be working and through this difficult time. And it's cool. It's good to just slow down and not jump into anger and frustration toward the situation or towards God, but to slow down and take a step back. And it helps us to be open and to see how we can be growing in this situation, seeing how God can be working in our lives. And by God's grace, if the difficult time will end, then we can look back at it and see how we have changed or what we have learned. And this can really strengthen our faith, because it shows God's provisions through it. And so our point number two is, don't grumble against one another when we're in hard times. James continues in verse 9 by saying, "Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door." In times of difficulty, it can be easy to become selfish and to not love others the way that we should or the way that we love ourselves. And it can feel good to bring others down below us in hopes that we can feel better and bring ourselves higher, but really, just doing that, it can stem from impatience and being selfish in tough times like this. And it's just easy to forget to love others all the time when we're experiencing these hard times. Like in Galatians 5, verse 22 to 26, it talks about how we should be walking in the Spirit and what that looks like. And so we all know the verse of the fruits of the Spirit, right? But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. This is such a great verse that talks about how those that walk by the Spirit should live. And those who live by the Spirit do not desire to grumble against one another and to put them down below ourselves, but to try and bring them up the way that Jesus would do that. And then it continues in verse 24 by saying, "And those who belong to Christ, those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires." And some of these passions and desires include grumbling and quarreling against one another. And by doing these things, we're not truly walking in the Spirit, as hard as it can be. But then he finishes in verse 25 to 26 by saying, "If we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, or envying one another." It's always a good reminder to do our best and to look to God when we're in hard times and just let go of our selfish desires and our selfish wants. And Matthew also touches on this a little bit in chapter 7, verse 12. It says, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets." This is a perfect example of how we should show love to others and not to be selfish. Because it's a lot easier to love ourselves than show love to others. And it's just a good reminder that when we're in these tough times, instead of grumbling and feeling sorry for ourselves, we should continue to look at ways that we can show love to others still. And I thought a good example of this was, so a few years ago, where I live in British Columbia, Canada, the Lower Mainland, we got lots of rain, and so the creek that flows through all the farmlands overflowed, and it just flooded the whole place. the entire, the lower mainland, all the houses, some of them were half underwater, and everything that the water touched pretty much needed to be thrown out or needed some serious cleaning, because what happens was the water fills up all the crops and all the farmland, and it also gets into the dairy farms where all the manure and all the feces and everything. So it just mixed in and contaminated, so it turned into quite the nasty mess. And so, one of my good friends lives right in the middle of there, and their place got hit pretty bad. His dad's garage was out in the back, and it was just full of water on the inside. Everything in there, it had his expensive tools, his dirt bikes, his snowmobiles, and everything he needs for work. It's all expensive, all high quality stuff. It all had to be gone, thrown out. Because it's worthless now. It's been destroyed by this nasty poop water. And not only that, he had a big, full, oil drum, or of old, used oil, and when the water went in, it tipped over and dumped and just filled that place. Yeah, it was a mess. It was pretty bad. And so he had every right to be upset with the situation and just give in to his emotions and be angry. But I was just amazed because he completely kept his composure. He was calm, and most of the time, when he saw some other things that had been destroyed, he just laughed it off. And so he was a very strong believer in Christ, and that day it really showed. And now, I was just amazed by what a good example he set for me and for everyone else around him. He knew that all this stuff that got destroyed is just stuff at the end of the day. It's just stuff. God gave it to him, and God could take it away. And so holding on to these things like that with loose fingers, that's what my dad would always say, that if it gets taken away, it's not as difficult. And so maybe many people came to help him clean up and, salvage what they could from the wreckage and help throw everything out. And he was very thankful. If he had given into his emotions and was grumbling and complaining and taking it out on other people, no one would want to help. And this would also just make it harder for him to let go of all the stuff that he lost. And so, he remained faithful through this and displayed what James 5 says very well, to be patient in suffering and to not grumble against one another. And so by stepping back and looking at our actions when we're in tough times, how can we react to this and how do we treat others when we're in hard situations? Instead of taking our frustration out on others, how can we turn it around and have a positive attitude towards the situation like he did? And how can we ask God for patience towards others when we feel like lashing out at them with anger? And so, our point number 3 here is a little different, but it says, but above all, my brothers, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you might not fall under condemnation. That was verse 12. Basically what James is saying here is that our words should all be truthful. God calls us to be people who tell the truth in all that we say and in all that we do. In Ephesians 4, verse 25, it says, therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. It's also somewhat of an echo of what Matthew says in chapter 5, verse 36. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. What this is saying is that we shouldn't promise things and bank on the fact that things will happen or what we think will happen. Because at the end of the day, we have no control in the matter whatsoever. We have no control in some of our emotions or some of the promises that we make. Because by doing this, we're not leaving any space for God's plan to unfold. And it even just means that we're putting our trust in ourselves, that we're going to do something rather than putting our trust in God. Because at the end of the day, he's the only one that's in control. And so I thought of a good example would be the boy who cried wolf, right? We all know that story. The boy is out in the field with his sheep, and he thought it'd be pretty funny if he made a joke and caused some panic by saying that there's a wolf nearby. And so everyone heard and runs over to help him. And when they get there, they just feel silly because the boy's laughing at them. He's like, you believe me. And so he does this again. You know, he calls wolf. Everyone grabs their pitchforks and knives and whatever and runs over there to go and save the day. But there's nothing there once again. And so they return home. And the last day, when there really is a wolf, you know, the boy's sheep are getting taken away or eaten, or maybe he's even getting hurt by the wolves. He calls for help, but no one comes to help him because they know that his words aren't truthful. This can be the same in our lives in some ways, even if they're just little white lies or, you know, just bend the truth a little bit so that we sound like better people. So just even thinking before we speak. Yeah, saying little white lies can make it easier in the moment sometimes, but at the end of the day, it'll come back and bite you in the butt. And God is always listening, and he knows when we do not tell the truth. And so even when the small lies can seem harmless, after a while, people will know that if we keep doing this, we can't be trusted, you know? And yeah, like it says, once again, in Ephesians 4:25, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. It's another good way that we can be walking in the Spirit and in ways that are honoring to God and showing that we are fully forgiven and fully giving our lives to the Lord and doing what we can, that we can be truthful even to those people that are hard to love or easy to grumble against. And so, yeah, James chapter 5, verse 7 to 12, it's a very applicable passage. It's simple, but it just demonstrates really good examples of ways we can be walking in the Spirit and having patience in times of suffering, even when we feel the suffering is unjust. Remaining patient causes steadfastness in our faith, and the steadfastness can bring us closer to God. Being patient when we can see the way God works in our lives, and we can see our blessings and sometimes how God's plan is revealed to us. While we remain patient, it's good. It's a good reminder not to grumble against one another and to bring them down just because we are suffering. But walking in the Spirit and showing love to them is always the way to go. It's always the right thing to do. And yeah, like he says, do not swear by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you might not fall under condemnation. Being truthful in our words is so important and a very clear command from Jesus. People should be able to trust the words that we say because we can follow through with our words and do the things that we say truly. Otherwise, if we lie, we can't be trusted. Yeah, even swearing or making promises that we can't keep, because God is the only one that has ultimate control over our lives and what we do or what we'll follow through with the promises that we make. And so, yeah, it's such a good reminder for us, showing us more and more ways that we can walk by the Spirit and put off our old ways, and ways that we can honor God through our actions and through our words. So, yeah, I just wanted to wrap this message up by reading James chapter 1, verse 2 to 4. I thought it tied it in very well, and it's just a good summary. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing.